And welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with your hosts, Daniel.
And Daniel.
Welcome, Daniel.
How's it going?
No, you're wrong.
I guess I am. I don't know.
Just so you know. No, I don't know. I was trying to try something new here, you know? Like, we haven't had, like, I thought it would be really fun to have, like, a lawyer, like, let's just, no, you're wrong.
I'm never wrong. As I tell my wife all the time, I'm never wrong. Just everybody else disagrees with me.
Right, correct. Well, I'm glad we all agree. So anyway, yeah, welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel. And
I'm Daniel.
I'm just trying to make you stumble today.
Apparently. I'm just confused. Well, I lost sound a minute ago, too. So I wasn't sure what you were saying. I'm just like, here we go again.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to change up our setups a little bit, you know, see if there's other variations on our setups that might work. So what if I were to say, welcome, I'm Daniel, and you say, and Daniel, and this is the Everyday Board Game Podcast. You see what I mean? Like, there's lots of ways we can vary this up. You see where I'm going with this?
Varying it up doesn't do us good. You have to stay consistent. That's how you grow on everything. I've learned this from watching a bunch of YouTube videos, right?
I completely agree, but this is the first episode it makes sense with. What are we talking about, Daniel?
Variable setup.
Variable setup, that's right. Games with variable setup. That's the whole reason why I did this. Actually, not really, but, you know, it is what it is. I just realized I probably made the screen a little strange on my end here. There we go. Let me fix it. All right. Yeah, games with variable setup. We want to try the games that have different ways of starting the beginning. Now, there was some that were on the list. You're probably thinking, what exactly is variable setup? Daniel, do you have the definition from Board Game Geek?
I actually do.
Ah,
so the definition is the starting game state varies from game to game through changes to shared game components like the map, and or changes to starting player setups, resources, objectives, or end, etc.
So let me ask you this. Let's say you and I are playing poker. Okay. I deal you a hand of cards. That hand of cards is different than the last time you played poker. Does poker have variable setup? Why or why not?
Well, it depends on which poker you're playing.
Any poker.
You have Texas Hold'em. Poker.
Let's go with that. Sure.
Yeah, then yes, there's variable setup. Everybody's going to get different hand of cards every time.
See, my counter argument is no. And that's because it's not, the setup is the exact same in the function, just what you're given is different. So, like, I don't consider necessarily Pandemic. We just talked about that on our previous podcast. I don't consider Pandemic to have a variable setup, even though the disease cubes are different every time you play. It's still, you're setting up diseases onto the board in different ways. Sure, it's the same quantities, but different cities. I don't consider that variable setup. I also think that variable setup is really important because it has, players have input as to what setup is going to be different sometimes. You could be random, but say, like, we're going to be talking about one here in a bit, but I want to bring it up right now. Dominion, you can choose which 10 cards you play with. Whereas, like, I didn't see Hero Realms as a variable setup. That's because you shuffle the deck and it's a card row. So it depends, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it. And I hope that makes sense as to how the game works or how these games will work. Because I feel like we're going to have to clarify some of these and why they're variable setup, specifically our number 3.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we'll have to clarify why that counts.
There is some variable setup with that one, though.
Yeah, there is.
But we'll get to it when we have to.
Pandemic doesn't, right? You know, that's why we got to.
Well, actually, that has more variable setup than Pandemic because it isn't just about the shuffle of the cards.
Exactly. That's why we're going to clarify.
Let's go ahead and do some news that we got to do before we get into everything. The podcast information that we need to give out. So, As you may all know, Top 8 Debate was not released last week. In fact, this is the Top 8 Debate we were supposed to record last week. Would you want to tell the people why?
Oh, yes. So, we had a lovely old time last week. Let me tell you about how fun last week was for Daniel and I. Him and I both got our vaccines. I got the one shot. You got the second of two shots.
Yeah.
And both of us felt it. It must affect Daniel's. I think that's what it is. It's the Daniel vaccine.
I'm telling you, I don't know. It was brutal. Like I was telling you on the other podcast and before we started this call, the pain in my left arm where I got the shot was so bad. If I didn't know this was a side effect, I would have thought I'd have a heart attack.
Yeah. And mine, I don't tend to get sick all that often, especially not like stuff like that. So side effects. And I didn't bring this up in the last podcast, but I'll tell you right now, Daniel. We were watching a movie and I was like, okay, well, I'll sit on the couch and relax. And I went from having chills to 101 degree fever within 45 minutes. And the wife felt it. She felt it happen because she was cuddling against me. And I went from just ice cold to just burning hot, like before the movie was done. It was absolutely insane. And a little worrisome, you know, especially the fact that the fever didn't break until later that next morning. I did have to take some medicine for it, but yeah,
it happened.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be fine. But oh goodness, was it something else?
Yeah, no, it was brutal. So yeah, with that being said, there are going to be some changes to this podcast. We're going to change the format a little bit. We have been pumping out 2 to 3 episodes a week since the start of lockdown of last year.
Yep.
That's got to change.
We took a break there for a little while. And this is also because of like that break. That kind of opened our eyes to it. Mm-hmm. Is that we put out so much content. We filmed so much content that most people, they can't realistically keep up. But two, if we have like a stint where we have to be off for whatever reason, mm-hmm. whether by choice or not, what are we going to do? And that's what we decided for this change. So how are we actually going to do this, Daniel?
So what's going to happen is we're not going to try to change the Twitch routine too much. We're going to still try to bulk record at times. It's going to help us. There may be times where we can't record, and that's why we're going to try to do bulk recording like we're doing now. And that's what's going to happen is we're going to start releasing one episode a week. We're still going to keep the formats that we have. We're going to do our Chits and Giggle discussion topics, and we're going to do our Top 8 Debate. They're just going to be released once a week. So right now, we filmed 2 episodes. We just filmed one before this. They are going to be released separately. This way, we can still consistently have stuff going up on the YouTube as well as for our audio listeners consistently. Twitch might not be as consistent, but we're going to have stuff in the background. The way it's going to work is every Wednesday, we're going to drop an episode. Whether last week it's or this week it's going to be a Chits and Giggles episode. This is the week of the, what day is it? The 12th.
The week of the 12th.
So on the 14th is last week's Chits and Giggles that we recorded. Next week, which will be the 21st, we'll release the Top 8 Debate. This episode right now we're recording. This will be released. You're hearing it when it releases on the audio podcast. Next week is going to be the Chits and Giggles we just recorded the following week, which would be like the first week of May or April or some last week of April. I don't want to do the math, but what's being said is Chits and Giggles are going to be twice a month. Top 8 Debate is going to be twice a month instead of 4 times a month for each of them. Yeah. I think also I'm going to make a format change to YouTube where I'm going to cut the podcast in half and release those on Tuesday, Thursday. But if you want the full version, audio version, it'll be Wednesday.
Cool. Sounds good. So that being said, why don't we get into this? Our topic, now that we've gotten the obvious stuff out of the way,
yeah.
Our topic this week was very simple. What games have the best variable setup? And as we were saying earlier, the variable setup is specifically there's ways to genuinely influence the game throughout, I think I clicked something weird on here, throughout or right at the beginning of the setup that drastically changes how you play during the game.
And it's not just, yeah, it's just the way it is. It's weird how they define it on Board Game Geek. Some of these fit better than others. Like, I'm going to go ahead and mention the first honorable mention from our audience, Terraforming Mars. The only variation of that one is through the draft, really, if you decide to do the draft. Because normally it's just based on the card roll, like you were talking about with poker.
Yeah, exactly. And see, like, when I was picking my three honorable mentions, I went through the list, and there's plenty of games that I really enjoy that were on the list, but most of which I passed by because I'm like, no, there's not much change in it. Like, you start slightly different, yeah, but it's not. And
so, well, my honorable mentions, it actually makes a lot of sense. So.
Yeah, all three of mine, I really wanted to have like drastic change. So, let's talk about starting from the bottom of our list. I'm going to start up there.
I never actually closed the votes and got the vote counts that I need. My bad.
Okay. While you do that, I'll just start from the bottom. Scar added Blood Bowl Team Manager, which I'm not familiar with that game. I don't know if you are, Daniel, but
I'm familiar with Blood Bowl, not Team Manager.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Scar also added Evolution, which I know is a game that you're a big fan of. How is the setup different? Are you?
I mean, I know you have a different. From what I can remember, there's not much different setup. Again, it's the shuffling of the cards and what cards you have in your hand decide to play. Other than that, it's just what you have in your hand.
Okay.
And it's not like you get to pick anything.
What's that?
It's not like you actually get to pick anything.
Right. Exactly. So it's that you start differently, but you don't choose it. But he also added Black Rose Wars, which is a game that I have not played.
No, I have not either.
Okay. A. Gerald Bitz added Newton, which is a game that I've been very interested in lately, but I have not gotten a chance to play.
Yep, same. Never played it.
Copeland added Street Masters. I'm not even familiar with that game.
Nor am I. I've never even heard of that. Man, they're picking some names out here.
Yeah, I like it. Kenny added Barrage, which I hear is like a nice, heavy economic game.
Game Nerds had it on a nice deal that sold out like that.
Yep, I believe it. That had three votes. We also had, I'm skipping past the ones that you actually added, because Ken added Vindication to our list with 10 votes.
Huh. I've heard of Vindication. I've never actually played it, so I don't really know a lot about it.
Yep. Kit added Gaia Project, which is one that I have not played.
I have not played it, but isn't that the sci-fi version of Terra Mystica?
I think it is, yes. That's what I've heard. And I definitely played Terra Mystica, and yes, it has very much variable setup.
I finally caught up. Stacy added Aeon's End.
Mm-hmm. And Bill added our number one winner as far as honorable mentions goes. 48 votes goes to Terraforming Mars, which I agree with you. I would not have put in this category otherwise.
Yeah, there's not much difference on it, unless you're including the expansions.
Yep.
I guess that could be your variable setup if you're including the expansions. But other than that, there is not that much. Hold on, I'm having issues with the poll. For some reason, it keeps giving me this query thing.
Yeah, that's fine. Now, going down the list, Stacy said Aeon's End, hands down, as a comment. Jim said Small Game Longhorn, which that one has been intriguing for me. I've seen that before, and that's one.
I've seen it.
This is one of the few examples where it makes it sound like we don't play games, because almost every honorable mention is one that like neither of us have played. Almost. Robert added Resident Evil 2.
Wow. The game is
great for creating customized levels. Very cool. I've not played that one either. Daniel. Hold on. Great name.
What? Represent?
Represent. Said Concordia, which was on the shortlist for my honorable mentions. I considered it. I just didn't think there was enough variation in how you played or how you set up the game. There is some, mainly in the cards and how like the tiles are in different regions. You have those. But you have to have a certain number of tiles per region and certain types of tiles. It's just those change. So In a way, yes, it is variable. I just don't think that it's huge difference. He's not wrong. It is variable. It didn't make my short list, but it was.
And guess what? Dan, represent.
Represent.
Says he's still in awe of Gaia Project's highly variable setup in contrast with its perfect information gameplay.
Yep. And then Nick added Clans of Caledonia.
Oh, I skipped one. Sorry, my bad.
That's fine. And so that was all of our comments on there. Let's talk about our honorable mentions, Daniel.
All right, I'm ready for this.
Okay. Let's get the Coin of Doom. That's
I was like, I'm waiting on the Coin of Doom. We didn't get to use it in the Chits and Giggles topic because it was actually a compare and contrast. So
that's right. Daniel, go ahead and start us off, sir.
All right. So my first honorable mention here is a game that you haven't played, but I played a mess of. And that is Rising Sun. It's still one of my favorite dudes on the map game. And this does have variable setup because depending on if you got the all Kickstarter or just any of the expansions or even just some of the base box game setup too, you change cards out and set up new cards just in the beginning of the game. Those are going to be the things that you can buy as you're playing the game. And then you have the setup about where you're going on the map, depending on your clan and who's first and stuff like that. Other than that, the main variable setup in this is just the different cards that you can buy throughout the game, depending on which style you want. So you have the basic ones, then you have the ones that have like the Godzilla legally distinct from, or some of the other bigger monsters, kaiju stuff that's going on. I have a lot of fun with this. Most points wins after the four seasons. You're playing this through a year. You start in spring, do a couple things, do a second part in spring. So it's like six rounds. And then the winter is your scoring. It's a really great game. I have a good time with it. I have everything for it. So the setup for it is different every time I play this game. So my number three, Rising Sun.
My number three is kind of a cheat. There is a lot of variability in how the game is set up, but mostly it's set up the same. So I'm eating my words a little bit. That's Liberation of Rightburn. And that's because at each game you set up the deck, generally speaking, of like which monsters, what you're going to be facing. Then you set up how many cards are dealt out based on the difficulty that you want to choose. And then the cards are dealt out to the different locations. And so you have variation into how it actually works. And how the timer works, but really it's a lot of uncontrollable variation, if you will. So that's why I say it's kind of my cheat. It is absolutely one of the best like co-op games, simple card game, really brilliant.
It's not bad.
And you enjoyed the mess out of it, actually. It's one of the best like examples of variable setup as far as a co-op game goes. That's not saying much, though.
So I do have to say this. I knew this was going to be on your list. That's why I ignored it. I do enjoy this game. I actually like this more than the other game in its world. What is it? Adventureland.
Legends of Andor.
Legends of Andor. There we go. Yep. Yeah. I prefer this over Legends of Andor any day of the week.
That's fair.
Second game on honorable mention here is Tekkenyu, Obelisk of the Sun. And you're going to go along the same lines of what we're going to talk about on another game that's part of the T series that everybody calls. This does have some variable setup, and it's mainly because of, again, the cards that come on the board, but also the cards that you end up drafting, because my setup can be completely different from game to game, depending on the one, two, three cards that I get up to choose the rewards and stuff like that. But then you also have the board has a random setup with the dice, or specifically one section has where you can have overlay boards to change what the rewards are from there to either make it a little more difficult or a little easier for people to understand how the game plays. So there is variable setup in just the beginning of the game. It's a nice dice drafting game that has an Egyptian theme. I know you have an issue with how like the dice go into the dark and the light and how they work and the drafting them. I enjoy it. It's a neat little mechanism. Is it a little overwrought? Yeah, but it's cool. At least they're trying to do something different instead of giving us the same game over and over again. I do also like the trying to keep balance with the dice that you play out there, where they're this way. If you go too dark, then you're going to get negative points. If you go too light, you're going to get further away from first player marker. I do like that. It's a good game. I enjoy it. I like some of the variable setup. Some of it is, but to continue, Obelisk of the Sun.
Cool. My number two is a game that's whole built about variable setup. One of the very different ones, and that's Kingdom Builder. Because at first you set up the boards in a random configuration and setting up in however modular way you do it. Then you set out like the city tiles that can be variable as you place them out. And then you set out the scoring tiles, which are also variations on different ways to score. And then you shuffle the deck of cards, and that's the ones you draw from. That's the only time that there is variation in the game. Otherwise, you play strategically on how you place out your pieces, three at a time. I love how different it is. It makes sense that this is the same designer as Dominion. It's an incredibly different game, but you can't fault him on how much variability you have in that game itself.
Donald X. Vaccarino?
Vaccarino. Mm-hmm. Donald X. Vaccarino designed both that and Dominion, which we'll be debating on later today. My number two, Kingdom Builder.
My number one is my GD pick, and it's right above your shoulder. I talk about this game a lot.
Funkoverse. Ogre.
No. That is horrifying.
Baron Park.
Oh, Baron Park. That's a good game.
That's a great game. No variable setup.
No, not
so none at all.
No. So Horrified is my number one pick. I saw that. It was on the list, and I'm like, yes. And the reason being, the main part of the variable setup is which monsters are you going to play as? You going to do two? You're going to do three? You're going to do four? Whichever one you want to do. How are they set up? If you're playing with this monster, let's say the Invisible Man. Well, there's an overlay that gets put on the board because you have to do something specific for that. Same with the Mummy. And then you have a little game that you have to play with the Mummy. Then you have to put coffins on if you're playing with Dracula. And you have the different dials based on the Frankenstein monster and the Bride of Frankenstein. You have so much setup just based on the monsters you're going to be playing with. Not to mention how the different stuff goes on the board. The chits, the items and stuff like that based on the back draw. Your variable setup is based on your characters too. Where do they start on the map as well based on your characters there? So there's a lot of differences in setup between games. And honestly, this is easily one of my favorite games to play with gamers and non-gamers alike, just because you can play it really easy with certain monsters that they recommend, or you can make it really difficult if you really want to play a tough game. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Good pick. And my number one has some of the most variable setup I've ever seen, just because of how much you can compound. And that is from AEG, Tiny Towns. Every building type has about five cards different. That is five.
And this is just the base
times
box.
Five times five times five. It is so exponentially different every time you play it, mm-hmm. because the base box alone has all those variability. I wanted to put Cubitos on this because that does a lot of the same variable setup as well, but I haven't played it yet, so I can't guarantee it. But Tiny Towns, oh man. Oh man, is that variable.
Yeah.
It's insane how variable it is. And then it's a game of pure strategy after that. I love it. I think it's awesome. I think it's gamer bingo, and it works really well for what it's trying to do.
They did a bingo mechanism well.
Yeah,
the only other one I ever actually played with bingo is, what is it? Rise of Augustus, is that, I guess, what it's called?
Yep.
And, meh, this one, I adore Tiny Towns. So I agree with your pick.
Cool. Yeah, Tiny Towns, that's my number one. If you haven't played it, go play it.
Yeah, no, I highly
recommend it. And every iteration.
And there's, what, three expansions for it now, which adds more variability?
Yep. Exactly. Every single time it adds on that much more differential. It's awesome. They did a great job with it.
All right. So that means we're going into the top eight debate. You want to tell the people, let's do the brackets. We haven't even done that yet.
Normally we do it right off the bat, but let's start it off. our number one seed, Everdell,
will be going up against our 8 seed, Dominion.
Number 2 seed, Marvel Champions.
The card game. Going up against number 7, Kalis. That's literally the full name. Marvel's Champions, the card game.
Is there a board game version that I'm not aware of? All right, number 3, Teotihuacan.
City of Gods. That's its full name. Going up against our 6 seed, 5 Tribes.
Was our number 7 seed Kalis or Kalis 1303?
Kalis.
Okay. Just making sure. I wanted to sound smart. number 4, Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Going up against our number 5 seed, Clank, the deck building adventure.
Oh, goodness. All right.
Let's put it in the poll, Clank Vanilla.
Clank Vanilla. Yeah, exactly. The base game of Clank. So how do we actually debate these? That's a good question that we like to answer every single time we do this podcast. And hopefully we'll get to the point where we don't have to repeat this anymore. But so far, there are 5 categories.
It's always good for our new listeners that just come in. So
that's right. We have 5 categories that we like to rank these on. First off, we go to BoardGameGeek.com and we pick a category, mechanism, family of game, publisher, designer, any category that we can rank it on.
And if Board Game Geek has a list, we use it.
Yep. And we picked the 8 games that Daniel and I have both played. Why do we pick games that we both played?
For we can have actually sound arguments. Because if it goes into a game where, like, I'm going to have to take your word for it, we're not going to get a debate. We're just going to be like, sure, if you say so.
I guess. Yeah. And then that would be a real fun thing if one of us got 8 games. Like, I knew all 8 games, and you're like, sure.
Sure.
This is a debate. Absolutely. Yeah, no, of course. So we picked the top 8 games that you and I have both played. If one of us has played it and the other one hasn't, it is exempt from that. And we're also allowing this new year of filming 1 veto each.
Each. Oh, yeah. Also Gloomhaven, because it's our first year champion, cannot be on the list.
That's right. So you'll see that mentioned, I'm sure, in honorable mentions later on in there. May or may not be. But then we also break it down by 5 categories, and this is how we determine which game is better. The first one that we have is ease of play. How easy is it to play the game itself? How simple or familiar are the mechanisms? Is it generally likely to get to the table more than others? And also, what are the odds of you having what's called analysis paralysis? Having flooded with so many options, so many choices that you freeze up and you delay the game.
Mm-hmm. Next category we go by is replay value. This comes down to how well the game plays from 2 to 4 to 5, depending on the player counts, as well as how long it takes it within that scale, as well as the minimum number of plays to get through the full experience. You play poker. One time, you know how to play poker. Doesn't mean you're good at it. You still know how to play poker. Whereas if you play something like Pandemic Legacy, you have to go at least 12 times to get the full experience of a game like that. And finally, the expandability. Does that already have expansions? We're allowing up to 1 possible future expansion if we believe that it's going to happen. Our biggest one that we like to use is Space Base. There is a Volume 1. So we're assuming there's going to at least be a Volume 2. Or if there's been expansions confirmed by the designer or the publisher to be coming out.
That's right. Then we have art and production. First off, art. Which one's better? Second one, pieces. Are the pieces really good quality? Do they have a good tactile feel? Do they help the game? And lastly, graphic design. That's important. Daniel and I are colorblind. We've experienced plenty of games with bad graphic design. Does the visibility of your game help you be able to play it? That's important. Is it icon heavy? Is it full of text? We'll find out.
Next on our list here is meaningful choice. This is a really important category for us because it tells us how much of a game the game is. Because do you impact the other player strategies in the game? Do you block a spot that you know they need to get to, or you draft a card you know that they want? You're impacting their strategy, as well as impacting your own long-term strategy. Does the choices I make in the first round of the game impact all the way through to the final round? As well as if you make an arbitrary choice, does it make the impact on the gameplay? Does it, I still have a chance to win if I just flip a card and see what happens, or do I have to make a smart strategic choice?
That's right. And our last category is game immersion. And the first thing is we have a variable category depending on whether the theme matches the mechanisms. When we choose a mechanism like this, how well does the game that we picked match that mechanism? So that point will go to which game has more variable setups, specifically in this debate. We also have player interaction. How well does the theme and playing the game get you immersed into role-playing that game? If I'm playing Red Dragon Inn, am I talking like a drunkard? Clearly I am at this point. speak correctly. And which game leads to more memorable moments? Which ones are likely to make you stand up and have everybody in the convention center look at you and bask in your glory because of how amazing that game is?
And finally, the last thing, it's not really a category, but it helps us decide the overall winner. If for some reason, even with all this criteria that we go down with, if there's a tie between games, that's why the poll is important that we talk about at the top, that you can vote on at the Board Game Revolution Facebook community every week that we put up. So the highest vote getter in a category will win and move on to the next round, or even become the champion based on the fan vote.
That's right. So with that being said, are you ready to jump into it, Daniel?
Let's do it. I got the Cup of Doom all nice and loaded.
And I have the Coin of Doom loaded as well. So this very first round will be Everdell versus Dominion. Daniel will pick one of them at random from his Cup of Doom. I will flip the coin. That will be the person who starts the debate. Let us begin. I will start the debate.
All right. So your game is Everdell.
Oh, so close. I joke because Dominion, I really do enjoy it. But Everdell, it was a fun game when we played it. It had a lot of things going for it. First off, the component, the production quality, off the chain. It's amazing.
Can't really see it because I moved it down a shelf, but you can see the Everdell tree right behind me.
That big tree, the production on that, beautiful. It holds cards at different levels. That's important to the game. That's really neat. The art on the cards, absolutely stunning. Gorgeous, gorgeous cards. And as a whole, and the pieces, the little like rubber berry things, those are super cool. But as a whole, the game itself is an engine builder. You're trying to get resources, send your dudes out. It's worker placement as well, if I remember correctly. You send your workers out there, take the resource or take the cards, pay for those cards, so put them in front of you. Each one of those has different way abilities throughout the game or different ways to score. So much variability in the setup. I wouldn't say it's necessarily as variable of a setup. It's more just like random decks. But there is some modular board pieces that do affect
Well, they're modular boards with the expansion, but you also have different cards that get set up. So like your end around goals are different every game because of you pull four different cards. Your actual board itself is different based on card pulls too. So you have different worker placement spots as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So there is quite a bit of variability. But I still think like variable, it's hard to beat Dominion where it has 30 different mini decks of cards and you choose 10 different ones every game.
I don't disagree with you on that.
But that's a minor point that I want to make for Dominion. As far as, art and production, oh my goodness, that's gonna go there. let's be real. Although
Bosley, you have to admit, though, his art in that game is just amazing.
Yes, but Ryan Lockett got his start making Dominion cards. The Adventurer is a Ryan Lockett art.
Wow, he's gotten a lot better ever since.
Yeah. There's some questionable art in Dominion. But, I mean, you have that many cards. You're bound to have a dud from here and there.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I have to argue Dominion here. It's not hard for me to argue Dominion. I'm not going to lie, I like Everdell more. To me, Dominion is good for what it is. But Dominion is a lot easier to learn. It's basically, you pick some cards, you play some cards, you end your deck, you're done. That's simple. There's a lot more going on in Everdell. So Dominion is a bit easier. The art, Yeah, it's good for what it is, in all honesty, but yeah.
It's functional. It's fine. The graphic design works perfect for what it is.
I do have to say, Dominion, man, does it get the replay value with all the expansions. Mm-hmm. The length of time and scaling, well, I think Dominion and Everdell are kind of the same. I think Dominion just plays a little bit easier. Dominion
is much longer, in my opinion.
You think Dominion's longer?
No, I'm sorry. Everdell's
longer. Everdell's longer. That's what I was saying.
Dominion's lightning fast. It's a 30-minute game.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'm just trying to find the right stuff here. The base box setup is just amazing. Again, you just said, just out of the base box, there's, 30 different stacks that you choose from? Don't get me started on the expansions. There's so many 13, 14, somewhere around there?
Yeah.
Everdell has 3 out right now and 2 more on the way. And I don't know if they're going to make any more after that. So that 5 in total. Most
other games, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a lot of choice of Dominion. And like I said, it scales well. And it's easy enough to teach and play. That's the thing about Dominion. It's really simple to teach. You're just like, hey, you have your 5 starting cards. You can buy cards. You can play cards. There you go. That's what you can do. So I'm going to go ahead and go into the criteria and let's just see what comes up.
Okay.
Ease of play. I think Dominion wins.
Absolutely.
Replay value.
Dominion.
I think Dominion wins. I think it wins 2. The length of time and the expandability. I think more gameplay because of what Everdell does in the expansions changes the gameplay. Meaningful choice. I think Everdell wins this one because of the strategy and how you're trying to. You don't have a lot of workers in the very beginning of the game, so you have to play smart, get your resources, get your cards out there. I think meaningful choice goes to Everdell.
Agreed.
Game immersion. Which one do you think wins game immersion?
Everdell.
Because we already know who wins art and production.
Yeah. Yeah. Art and production goes to Everdell. I think game immersion also. Although I think variable setup goes to Dominion. Stand-up moments and player interaction is definitely Everdell.
Everdell, yeah. Because the thing I like a lot about Everdell, not a lot of people use it, but if you have certain cards in your tableau in front of you, I could send a worker and go use your card to get the resource on there. And I think that's pretty cool that it, in fact, I can go play on someone else's city. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Everdell moves on just because of the game immersion, though Dominion did put up a fight, even though we first looking at this is like, really? Dominion?
Yeah, no, it's because it's definitely variable setup. And there's more to Dominion than it comes down to, but we're being honest about it. Although coming up soon, I know we're going to be debating on some of the questionable production choices of Everdell later.
Yeah.
If there are a few. So next level will be Marvel Champions versus Kalis.
I know which one you're hoping for.
I know which one I like a lot better.
Yeah, so do I.
You'll be starting this off.
What's interesting about this is I enjoy both of these games. I just recently bought one of these games because there was a great deal on it.
Sure.
All right, I'm starting.
Yeah, you'll be starting, and I'll soon be teaching Marvel Champions once we get back to the shop. Okay.
And I get Marvel Champions. All right, so Marvel Champions. Honestly, one of the better Marvel games out there. I have to say, so if you're going with Legendary, Marvel Champions, and more recently Marvel United, it's probably my second favorite out of all three of those that I just mentioned. I like it more than the deck building game. But Marvel United, though, if we were talking about Marvel United, I'd hands down be pushing for that game. I'm surprised how much I enjoyed it. But Marvel Champion does have your variable setup based on really the big bad you're playing and the stuff that goes into his deck, as well as what characters you're going to play as if you're playing the Hulk and stuff like that, because you're going to put bad things into the deck there as well. As for that, it's very well produced, especially for a card game. It's got great token quality. It's easy to read. The graphic design is well done. Being a living card game, there's something always coming out with it, whether it's hero packs, villain packs, big expansions, small expansions. And they're releasing like one thing a month for the last 3 years. It's ridiculous. Our mutual friend who has this game has got everything. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't keep up with this. I'm just going to get what I want out of it, and that's it. I'm not going to be like trying to hunt everything down like the Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch and stuff like that. I'm just going to try to find what I want out of it. And there is good choices in the game, such as, do I become a hero? Do I go to my alter ego? Do I heal? Do I attack the villain? Do I attack the henchman? Do I do special abilities to help get rid of his schemes and stuff like that? I enjoy all of that. But when it comes to like the variable setup part of it, I really think Kalos has a little bit more, because it's basically just the big bad.
I think Marvel Champions has far more variable setup. Because really? You change up. Yeah. Oh yeah. Compared to Kalos, because Kalos is just which tile set you have out. That's literally the only variable setup. And there's like some starting sections that you can change as well. That's about it though. Where Marvel Champions, you do pick, you know, the goal of the game.
It's we're arguing the regular K-list. I have to say the art production goes to Marvel's Champions hands down just for the box cover alone.
And if this was K-list 1303, then I feel like that would be better, you know. But it's K-list is outstanding. It is one of the first worker placement games of ever. It's attributed to being the first one. And that's because that really set a standard. That set a precedence of a mechanism that was really up there. Just like Dominion made deck building, Kalos made worker placement. And because at that point, you couldn't just play a game where you're like, oh, well, I can go to any spot, even if you own it. Like, what? What is this concept? Why are you breaking my brain? That's why Kalos was really awesome. And then on top of that, you have really decent resource management, asymmetric resources too on top of that. You know, resources are clearly different. You know, you're building only certain things with that. But if we were to break it down, I think Kalos is one of the best Euro games I've ever played. It doesn't get enough love anymore because so many things have surpassed it. But really, like, I think a lot of people, they discover Kalos really late on, and then they realize, like, wow, this is actually really something. This is intense. And it has a lot of really stand-up moments because of that Provost piece. That's brilliant.
I don't know if that's really stand-up moment. It's more like, I'm going to punch you in the face for moving that jerk.
Yes, and that's the point. You haven't even gotten a fist fight over Kalos, which is rare in a lot of games. It's common for the debate, but it's rare when we're actually playing. So that's worth noting. So if we were to break it down, I think this is also another pretty close one. Art and production, definitely
champions. Marvel's Champions.
I don't think it's all that simple.
I think Marvel Champions is a little bit more simple than Kalos, but not by much. I just think because it's the icons are easy to read, and it basically explains everything you do on the card itself. So it's just a little bit easier to me. I remember the first time we played Kalos, and I'm just sitting there like,
abilities that you don't get, that you don't know in Marvel Champions. There's a lot of abilities that they don't specify it. And then on top of that, knowing the phases of the game, like, that's a lot of overhead, in my opinion.
Honestly, I played both of these fairly recently. I played Kalos because you own it, and I played Marvel Champions because our mutual friend owned it, and I'll soon own it. And they're from the same time. I played both of these. I found Marvel Champions a lot easier to understand than Kalos. There was stuff like, I don't know, like, you can move the Provost 1 to 3 spaces. You want to go to this point where you can get the resource before somebody else does. There was just a lot going on where I'm just like, lost.
Well, the
Marvel, I wasn't as lost because I'm more familiar with card games of that nature, not just LCGs, but because Marvel Deck Builder or just playing deck builders in general made it a lot easier for me to understand that rather than, okay, this goes on, this goes on, this goes on.
Well, let's break it down a little bit further then. I think likelihood to getting to the table, that's definitely Marvel.
Marvel.
Everybody loves superheroes over then the angry dude on the cover going like that. The AP prone, I would say Marvel is more AP prone personally, just because
I have to disagree with you on the AP prone, because I remember when we played Kalos with 3 people, I got AP prone and I'm not very AP prone.
It's the fact that you have to pay some cards to pay for, or the cost for others, you have to discard other cards. And some have like the little symbols on the bottom, like you can benefit. That's where I'm going with it. but you have the added benefit of being cooperative, but then you also have the disadvantage of having cards in your hand being cooperative. It's like, well, I can't really show you because then that would make it way too obvious of what we need to do.
Yeah, then, no, I get that part, but I just think because with everything that's going on in Kalos, and I'm not trying to push Marvel right. or something like that, but the AP part of it is that I'm moving here, or do I move here? Do I move the provost? Do I need go to this spot this way? I know you need to go to that spot. It's just a lot of the stuff that's being thrown at you in Kalos could lead to, all right, I'm playing the Hulk. I want to smash that guy in the face. Let me play these three cards where I can use this one card. That's okay. A lot simpler.
That's fair. All right, we'll give it ease of play then. Art and production and ease of play go to champions. Meaningful choices goes to Kalos.
Kalos.
Hands down. There's no arguing that. memorable moments. I'm sorry, game immersion. I'm sorry. I don't feel it's thematic at all playing.
But see, we're not going about thematic on this one. Category is about how variable setup better.
Right. But I'm talking about as far as like player interaction.
Yeah, no, I don't get the player interaction all that much more. I agree, hands down, the player interaction is better in Kalos. Memorable moments, I could see it as a wash to an extent because, you know, you're fighting the big bad if you beat them and stuff like that. Now, variable setup, which fits the variable setup better.
That's Marvel. Absolutely. Marvel. Yep. Okay, so that goes to Marvel, which means it moves on.
And honestly, replay value goes to, yeah, just because, again, it's a living card game. They're releasing something once a month for this game.
Yep, exactly. So Marvel Champions moves on to our second seed. Our next round, Teotihuacan versus Five Tribes. And Daniel, you'll be starting this one off this time around. Which one do you want to go for? Yeah, I know you both love both of these games.
I love both of these games, honestly. I own three of the T-Series. I have Teotihuacan and Zulkin. I haven't played yet. I do own it, and I also have Tekinu.
I honestly thought you were about to say, I own three of the two games that we're debating today.
I own both of these games that we're talking about right now, and I enjoy both of them immensely. So I'm going to be good with whatever happens. All right, so the game I get is Teotihuacan. Right. So going through this list with Teotihuacan here, I see where you have an argument for the variable setup, but the beginning of the game does change. Again, I talked about it with
Tekinu. There is variable setup in this game. I completely agree. It's just that you can technically play with a completely non-variable setup.
Yeah, you have that, but you can change it. Basically, I talked about it at the top with Tekinu. The variable setup is if you choose to do it. You have the different things that you can put on the board to make it a little different, the rewards a little different, based on the tiles that are coming up, as well as how the tiles themselves get played out on the board, the drawback and stuff like that. Honestly, though, there's not much more variable setup than, say, Five Tribes if you're just doing blind draws and stuff like that. Right. Five Tribes has a little bit more because of that blind draw, because how you're seeding the board based on the meeples coming out of the bat. However, both are very well-produced games. Mm-hmm. There is a plethora of choices in both of these games. So this one is going to be another one that really, really comes down to how we're going to break this down. Because, again, when we go down to like ease of play, both of these aren't really that easy to learn and play. No. One's a bit easier than the other, but not much.
Which one do you think is a bit easier?
Five Tribes.
Agreed. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. And that's not to say that, like, because Teotihuacan is worker placement, technically, but it's like a massive
on Rondell thing
with dice that upgrade.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with Teotihuacan. Honestly, these are, like, next step Euro games, medium weight, I guess you can say. I think... Whereas Five Tribes is medium to lighter weight, yep. I think Teotihuacan is medium to heavier weight. They're like on that.
I think Teotihuacan is heavyweight Euro. Absolutely.
Yeah, I can see that. They're both really good games. I enjoy the mess out of them. But as I was building this list and going through my talking points on here, I was looking at this and I'm like, wow. Now that I think of these two, I think Five Tribes should move on. Because both, even though they're both very well produced, the graphic design in Five Tribes is a lot better. It's a lot more colorful and a lot easier to read.
Yep. And the pieces just make sense for how they're doing.
And my big point with Tales to Walken is that board is so busy. You have to pay attention to everything that's going on, not just by what you're moving, because each spot you go to has two or three different things that you can do. And if you do a certain point, like say your guy gets to level six or on the die face becomes a six, then you have to do this whole little mini thing because they ascended and got buried along the way. And I got to remember to do that. And then I got to remember to do this little thing over here. And there's so many little cheatsy things that you have to keep remembering. Now, mind you, I'm not detracting and I'm supposed to argue for Tales to Walken. I like this game. I enjoy the mess out of playing this and I'm glad I own it. It's just, I think Five Tribes is a lot simpler.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I do think Five Tribes is honestly a better game just because of the fact that, and you know how much I like my meaty Euro games, I don't like it necessarily when you're playing where you have to know the rules for five different sections of the game or like multiple different sections of the game. And I think there's like eight spots, right?
Yeah.
So that's like, there's more rules per spot.
I think there's like 10 spots because you've got three across the top, three across the bottom, and then one in the middle.
Yeah, so then that's
eight. Eight.
Yeah, but so either way, though, I mean, that's, you have to remember.
Well, the thing is, there's eight spots, and that's not mentioning the middle stuff, like building the pyramid and how the pyramid's supposed to work, or putting the little things on the side of the pyramid and how that's supposed to work,
or
the ascension track and those little tracks that you're going up because of certain,
Nope, I just don't. It definitely hits a couple cylinders on us. Like, I like this out of the T series is probably my second favorite. Hated Takenu, but I like Zolkin a lot, so I get it. But at the same time, like, I don't know. Five Tribes just makes more sense. It's a better game.
So I think Five Tribes is easier to play. Five Tribes has a little bit more immersion because honestly, Tales to Walken is just mechanistically.
Oh yeah, it's all mechanistic.
You don't really feel like you're Aztecs.
No.
Five Tribes, I think they're equal on expansions because I think there's two for Five Tribes plus a little couple promo stuff. And there's two or three for, I think there's two out and one more coming out for a Tales to Walken. So. No.
But scaling wise, it scales a lot better in
Five Tribes.
Yeah.
And also, art and production is better in Five Tribes.
It is.
Not to say indie board and games or Dyson games or whatever it is don't do a good job. It's just, it's a lot more colorful. There's a lot more going on.
It's Days of Wonder. Against Days of Wonder. Yeah.
It
really is. Still to this day.
So I think we're in agreement. Five Tribes?
Agreed. Five Tribes moves on.
Ooh. And so we were saying like art and production, it's going to be hard to compete against Days of Wonder. Well, guess what?
Well, I have a solid argument against one of them. Our next round is Quacks of Quedlinburg versus Clank. And I will be turning off this debate today.
Okay, so that's gone. That's
both of these games are pool builder games, to point out. One's specifically a deck builder dungeon crawl, which was some push your luck. And then Quacks of Quedlinburg is a pool building token game with push your luck during the game itself.
Hey, guess what? Which one you get?
Clank?
Yep.
Clank, yep, of course. So Clank, no, it's a deck builder. Really smart deck builder where you are pushing yourself down the dungeon. I don't want to automatically disqualify it because we always have like one specific argument against it that was found later on. But I'm going to completely take that out of the variable because I want to realistically compare these two.
They're both good games.
They're both good games, yeah. One's a deck builder where you're dealing with movement and how you're getting more cards and dealing with the monsters that are there while trying to add noise to another pool and not trying to wake up the dragon, which is the trigger to the end game, because your clank is your noise. And so which is hilarious because you imagine a guy walking down with big old loud armor. Like, yeah, they're not exactly stealthy walking on that dragon, are they? But they're probably going to be able to fight it better. So plank is a cool, if you like deck building, there's a reason it has that. And also, I've been wanting to try the legacy version. I'm really curious how much better that
is. Yeah, so same. I do, the one thing you wanted to throw out, but my big argument is the run and gun. They fixed that for further things. And I don't disagree. Clank is a fun game. It's just that run and gun really took me out of it, and I've been very hesitant to get back into it. Mm-hmm. Now, Quax, on the other hand, I cannot get enough of this game. I love playing it. I haven't played it in a while because, 2020 had to happen. But it's a very simple game to teach and learn. I think it's actually simpler than Clank. And that's saying something because Clank is just a deck builder. But you're just putting things in your bag and you're pulling things out of your bag. That's it.
Yep.
There's a little more to it, but it's that simple. Both are very well produced. Both are very colorful. And here's the thing about Quax. It's got a lot of color on it, but we can still see everything pretty well.
Yep. And the tokens are the same shape. So that means that the art, graphic design is really solid on it.
Solid, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, Clank's fun. And it does have some memorable moments. But man, does Quax really give you that table talk when you're trying to egg on your opponents to pull that. Like, come on, man, you know you want to. No, but I got three chits in here. One of them can make me bust. Just do it. Come on. What's going to happen? What's the worst that's going to happen?
Too. You and I both pull tokens. Come on, let's do this. Yeah.
Let's do it. And I love that table talk, that interaction, because even though you're basically playing multiplayer solitaire, you're still engaged with the other players because you just really want to get into their skin and try to force them to do something they don't want to do. And the thing I like about it with this one, with the push your luck aspect on it, even if you bust, it's not a completely bad thing because you still get to put stuff in your bag or you get the other reward. You don't get to do both if you do fine. You get to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
Still keeps you engaged even if you keep busting. And in fact, it makes you want to keep going. Now,
more.
I think Clank, if we're going by our thing, gets the replay value because I think there's just more expansions or just even one modular expansion gives you more experience with it. And I think there's two out for Quax right now.
Yep.
But one of them is not in English.
No, the second one is. It is now, I think.
It is? No, because last I heard is that...
Although I might be wrong, but it's still available.
Yeah, because when I wrote this, the expansion's still only one out in German right now.
Still counts. Clank still gets it either way.
Yeah. So I'm going to go through this, the breakdown. Ease of play, I think Quax wins. Not by much, but I think Quax wins.
Yeah.
Because Clank is pretty simple. Meaningful choice.
There is more meaningful choice, feel, in Quax. And that's because no, that push your luck is the crux of the game. And sure, you still get the same pool building like you have in Clank, but the problem is in Quax you get 9 rounds of whether you stop or not, whereas in Clank you have the one throughout the game, like at what point do I run,
push and run. Yeah.
And then if you get knocked out from it, you're not necessarily going to lose, but you're probably not going to win.
All right. So we know replay value goes to Clank. And honestly, I'd have to say game immersion goes to Quax, but I do want to at least do the last one here. Who do you think wins art production? Because we said Quax has really good graphic design. But does it win better art than Clank?
No. I don't think so either. Better in Clank as well.
And I think the production value is a little better in Clank.
I mean, the tokens are fine. The bags are really good. The boards are solid.
Yeah, but you also got the minis, the
How well do the cards
shuffle?
How well do the cards shuffle? If I remember, they're good quality cards.
Too. Oh, they're great quality cards. They're some of the better cards in deck builders.
Yep. I'll give it to Clank.
But by our rules here, ease of playing, meaningful choice, and game immersion, Quax goes on.
Quax goes on. All right. Good job, Quax. of Quedlinburg specifically. So, in our next round, Everdell will be versus Five Tribes, and Champions, or Marvel Champions, goes against Quacks of Quedlinburg.
These are really good produced games, so I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, I know what you're trying to say. I'm just saying that these are well-produced games. So the fan votes, the ones that have been eliminated. Our number 8 game, Dominion, was our 5th best vote getter at 7. Let's see. Our number 7 game, Kalos, which was eliminated, was our least favorite game in the fan votes. It had a total of 5. Next up here, we have Tale to Walk in City of Gods, which was our 3 seed. It was our 3rd best vote getter at 10. And finally, the last one eliminated was Clank, the deck building game. And that was our 5 seed at 8.
Very good. All right. So now our next round will be Everdell versus 5 Tribes. Do you have a favorite out of these?
I know which one I like more.
Okay.
But I love both of these games.
Yeah. And you will be starting us off.
And I get 5 Tribes.
Okay.
Alrighty, so 5 Tribes versus Everdell. This is tough for me because both of these games are really good. I think one is better produced than the other one, slightly. It's just because of the art on the cards as well as the production value of the minis. Because it's basic minis in 5 Tribes, whereas you got animal meeple characters in Everdell. That's the only thing I think art production wise it moves on for there. Ease of play, I think 5 Tribes is just a little simpler than Everdell, just because honestly it's Moncala. You're just moving this, whatever I think you have left is what you do. Yep. whatever you land on. Meaningful choice, 5 Tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Replay value, Everdell.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think Everdell for me personally is just the better game because it's a combination of things that I love. You got your cards, you got your worker placement, and you have your tableau building. I enjoy all of those. It's also easier for me to get to the table when we're talking about ease of play because of the theme and a bit of an issue with the first print run of 5 Tribes. Now, the 5 Tribes you're going to pick up nowadays, there's not going to be an issue with that. But if you have someone who has a first print run, there is going to be a bit of an issue. So warning about that. Sure. Other than that, honestly, I think 5 Tribes moves on.
I agree with you. And there was only one argument that I really had against Everdell compared to 5 Tribes. And that's because while the production is absolutely stellar in Everdell, it is questionable. And that's because of, first off, the tree. The tree, lovely, only accessible from one side. Kind of blocks the vision of anybody else. So unless you have a big table and you have it all set up on one side, doesn't really work. Rectangular tables don't work. Round tables don't work for Everdell. And sure, you can play with the board.
I think the Belfair expansion, they just put like the Everdell tree on a board at the top.
Yeah. Yep. They had to do it because it's beautiful, but
functional. It's gorgeous. If you notice, it's also a pain in the butt to build up. I have the cardboard one behind me. You can't really see it too well now. But if you look in our past ones, I had it up on the top show. I leave both of my trees set up because they're a pain in the butt to set up and tear down without damaging the art on it.
Yeah, completely agree. I completely agree with that. Way it takes up so much room, like the board is gorgeous, but like the way it's laid out is not functional well.
It is functional when you start attaching all the other boards, but then you have nowhere to play your cards.
Exactly. And I've never enjoyed that in a game where there's like That was like my biggest argument against like Tidal Blades when we played it, is like, why are all these boards these shape? Why are they modular like this? Like,
yeah.
What's the function here? It's like they don't even hold the cards that they need to.
I like Everdale for what they try to do with the modular boards, because it you can, when you have every boards, it makes a really nice panoramic scene. It just takes up so much table space.
Yeah. And that's when form becomes a problem to function.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they want it to be pretty, they succeeded, it's gorgeous, it's great. But it gets a knock in my production value because it's not functional.
Well, see, I say it gets a knock in a graphic design, but the other two categories in our art and production, I think it wins. The production value, I think the artworks is amazing, and the production itself is really good. I just think it gets the knock in graphic design because it's nice, it's just not functional.
Yeah, exactly. So you say Five Tribes moves on?
I say Five Tribes move on because I think it gets ease of play. It's a bit simpler because when it comes down to it, it's just Moncala with some, you know, buying cards and stuff like that. I think there's a lot more meaningful choices in Five Tribes. I say Arn Production goes to Everdale. Replay value goes to Everdale to an extent, because I think it wins two of the three categories. I think the scaling goes better in Five Tribes.
Yes.
But barely. But in game immersion, I think goes to Five Tribes a lot more. I've played Everdale a lot. I've played it probably four or five times within the last year or two. And I just have more memorable moments with Five Tribes when someone takes your Moncala move that you had, don't do it, and they do it, and you're like, ah. Or they take the gin that you were saving up to buy, or they assassinate one of the things that just ruins your next move. There's just a lot more stuff in game immersion.
Yep, completely agree. Cool. We're in agreement here. Our next round will be Marvel Champions versus the Quacks of Quedlinburg.
I think we're in agreement on this one before we even start.
Yep, probably. And I will be starting off this argument.
And guess what? You get Quacks.
Good. Quacks is just a better game. It's everything about Marvel. The only thing that makes sense about Marvel is that it's a cooperative superhero themed game. There are plenty of other superhero themed cooperative games that just do it better, in my opinion.
Marvel United, yes.
Huh? Marvel United.
Marvel United, yes.
Yep, absolutely. And
I don't think Legendary Marvel does it better. I think it actually does it worse than what Marvel Champions do, because of the whole, if you play the game how it's supposed to be played, you're competing heroes.
Yeah, exactly. Which doesn't make... Anyway, we digress. It just doesn't make sense. So, Quacks of Quedlinburg, I think the art is better in Marvel Champions. Everything else is better in Quacks, because the symbology...
Okay, let's break it down with the art. Graphic design, better in Quacks.
Yes.
Art is better in Marvel Champions. Art in production, better in Quacks.
Yeah, the pieces
are better. Pieces of the components, yeah.
Yep. Agreed. So art and production goes to Quacks. Ease of play, also Quacks.
Quacks.
It's much simpler.
I know one thing that Marvel wins.
What's that?
Replay value.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. But meaningful choice, even then, they both have some pretty arbitrary choices in it. But
they really do.
But this is just literally, you can play what's in your hand, but you don't have any choice of what you get in your hand. You just...
Then even sometimes you really don't get to play what's in your hand. If you don't have the right things to pay for the other cards in your hand, it's just like, well, I do nothing. I'm going to go to hero mode and heal.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
So then, I will give Marvel Champions one thing, and it's not even in our category, because it's based kind of like all the other LCGs. It's a great solo game. So if you want something that gives you that superhero feel, and you want to play quickly, and you can only play solo, pick up Marvel Champions. Give it a shot.
Well, I mean, that goes into scaling well.
Yeah, Marvel Champions, you can play by yourself.
Yeah. That's already bonus on top of Quacks.
Yeah.
But then, even then, game immersion is Quacks as well.
Yeah, honestly, I played both of these games almost an equal amount of numbers, and Quacks, just the laughter at the table alone, mm-hmm. of trying to egg, like, I'm egging Daniel on over here, Come on, pull it. I'll pull it. You pull, right? Come on, let's do this. I know I'm going to bust, but I just want to see if he'll bust.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm okay with it. Like, let's bring it on. Woolies pulling. Come on, come on. Come on. Like, what are you saying?
Quack. So I agree with you. Quacks should move on to face Five Tribes. I just think Quacks is an amazing game. And that's saying something. I like Everdell. I like Marvel. Quacks is one of the few games on this list I don't own. But I actually would say I like Quacks a lot more than any other game on this list.
Yeah, although Five Tribes is the only game I think that can really put up a solid fight against it right now.
Oh, yeah, so, no.
It does. In our final round, we do not flip the coin. We do not pick sides. We just simply break it down by categories and try and make it as easy as possible. But before we do that, we had some games eliminated. How were they perceived by the audience?
So, Marvel Champions, the card game. I still don't know why it's called Marvel Champions, the card game. It's weird to me. Like, we don't know it's a card game.
Right.
So, Marvel Champions was our fourth vote getter at 9. And Everdell, which was eliminated by Five Tribes, was not only our number one seed, was also our number one game. At 26 votes. It beat our number two by 1 point.
Ooh. Wow. Well, good job. That's impressive. All right. Our final round. Quacks of Quedlinburg versus Five Tribes. This is going to be interesting, I feel.
Yeah. And just to reiterate, for those who are new to our podcast, we don't choose a side in the final round. We go step by step on our five criteria to find out who the winner is. So with that being said, is there anything that jumps out at you?
Art and production. Five Tribes. Absolutely. That's the first sight. Definitely is obvious.
Yeah, although, no, I don't disagree with you.
Player range and scaling. I know it's part of replay value, but scaling, I feel, goes to Quacks.
It does, because it moves so much quicker. And in all honesty, though, and with the expansions, I think they're even. There's two each, right?
I believe so, yes.
So that's a wash right there. So,
Now, variable setup, though, which is a category. That goes
but that's Quacks. In game immersion, so... Before we finish that, let's finish replay value. Minimum number of plays to get the full experience.
Quacks.
Quacks.
Yeah. Because even though the tiles are so variable in Five Tribes, they're just ways to score points.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So replay value goes to Quacks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So moving on to game immersion, as you were trying to do, the variable setup. Which fits better?
Quacks.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that one.
Yeah,
that I could think of off the top of my head.
Like four or five different options for it.
Yeah. And then it's not just that. It's the Five Tribes. The main setup really is what cards come up and how the meeples go on the board.
Right. Now, which one has more player interaction?
Honestly, I have to say Quacks. As much as Five Tribes is just because of the Moncala mechanism, you get angry with someone making moves something. But with the actual table talk and player interaction, I just think Quacks... There is more of that because you're egging each other on. You're trying to make them bust. And it's just, I don't know. Yeah. I just think because, again, a multiplayer solitaire game, in essence, has so much table. It's like comparing this to Castles of Burgundy. Both are very, you're only really worried about what's going on in your board.
Right.
But whereas with Castles of Burgundy, you're just sitting there like, okay, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. Where Quacks and Quedlinburg is like, come on, you know you want to pull it. I know you only need one more. Come on, let's do it. Come on. It's just, we keep going back to that. But even though you're so enthralled on what you're doing on your side, you're also trying to see what they're doing to mess with them.
Yeah. And what makes it interesting is the fact the player interaction, it's not a cooperative game, but when somebody does something really amazing and goes huge in Quacks and Quedlinburg, everyone's excited.
You're them. Cheering them on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It could mean you lose the game, but you're like, that's amazing. Keep going there, buddy.
And then the last one we had was Meaningful Choice, which would go to Five Tribes, but that's still not enough. That means today our winner. Do we have enough for the winner?
Oh yeah, because he's a play goes to Quacks.
Yep. The winner for this. So
3-2.
Yep. Quacks of Quedlinburg. By Wolfgang Garsh. Wolfgang Warsh, sorry.
Our four seed moves on and wins. A variable setup.
And I don't believe this is the first win for it either, is it?
Oh, no. Let's see. I actually have the old sheet from year one, so I can tell you this is actually its fourth win.
Wow. Wow.
It won three in the first year, which was deck bag, pull building, push your luck, and medieval theme. Mm-hmm. And this year, it won variable setup. So these stats will not count for Quacks when we go to our year two. Mm-hmm. But that's impressive still, the fact that this is its fourth win.
Absolutely. Very cool. So good job, Quacks of Quedlinburg. This has been a fun episode. We enjoy these always. If you ever want to join us and watch us on a live debate and provide your input as well, you can at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames.
As well as all video re-uploads of these are found on YouTube at Everyday Board Games 2020. And if you like what we've done, and give us a follow, give or subscribe there, like the video, also comment and tell us which is your favorite of the games that we had in this or your honorable mentions. Doing so helps us grow on the platform, as well as all audio versions can be found on most podcast platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast, which includes Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and Podbean. And screw you, iTunes.
If you ever want to say hi to us directly, you certainly can. Or even if you have an idea for future episodes or just want to tell us why we're wrong in one of our previous episodes, absolutely. Reach out to us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com.
As well as you can get into contact with us on our official Twitter account at EBGPodcast.
So we want to thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I've been Daniel.
And I've been Daniel.
And we want to thank you for listening to Everyday Board Games.
Have a good one, and remember, one video a week, one audio a week.